Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired in the Premiere Networks on Sunday, August 5th, 2018. This is episode 1512. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, your worst nightmare. A geek with his own radio show. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number if you want to call and talk with me about tech. Mostly it's people going, why doesn't this work? What's wrong with this? Don't say, what's wrong with me? I know people, they're very funny. They're apologetic. It's my fault. I did something wrong. No, it's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. These things are terrible. The people who design them, the engineers who design them, kind of understand not only how they work, but how they don't work. And they just, they work, they call it a workaround. We're going to work around the problem. We'll just work around it. I don't want you to have to work around it. We'll see if we can fix it. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you could still call. Just use Skype and, you know, that kind of thing. We have a website. I should mention this. It's free. It's open. No sign up. It's called techguylabs.com. And we try to put everything that we talk about on the show, links, articles, stories, answers, on that website. So if you hear something, you don't have to write it down. Just techguylabs.com. And that's thanks to James DeRuvo, who's jotting this down as I speak. And then, of course, Josh Windisch over here, who will then add audio and video from previous shows. So it's really kind of a complete archive of what happened on the Tech Guide, episode 1512 today. You know, periodically I'll get a call, and this happens also in the chat room. People say, oh, CCleaner, you got to use CCleaner. This is a product that's been around for years and years. It's what they call a registry cleaner. There's a lot of voodoo. As with anything where you don't really understand what's happening or why it happens or how to fix it, and that there's a human need to explain it and come up with a fix. And before we knew about the bacterial theory of medicine, before we knew how infections happened, we had a need to figure out why are people getting sick, and they thought, well, it's humors, it's bad air, it's in the blood. They had all sorts of crazy theories and fixes, none of which worked because the theory was wrong. But that's the natural, that's the normal thing for human beings to go, well, Windows is acting funny, or it's slowed down, or it won't boot, and they create a theory in their head. It's the registry. It's the registry that's, and so somebody's created basically the equivalent of leeches for your Windows machine called CCleaner that you apply to your Windows machine, and it draws the bad humors out of it, and everything should work fine. And it sometimes works, you know, or this is why, you know, all of that medieval medicine persisted. Occasionally, the patient gets better. And, well, you see, the patient dies. We didn't draw enough blood, or we didn't cut the skull open soon enough. You know, so there's always an excuse. CCleaner is, in my opinion, really on that level. There is this thing in Windows. It's a terrible idea. Everybody knows it. Even Microsoft probably knows it by now. It was created really in the earliest days of Windows, called the registry. It's a giant blob of a file that everything puts stuff into. The Windows uses it to store settings. Programs modify it. There's keys all over the place. And unfortunately, a lot of times when you uninstall or remove or fix something in Windows, the registry doesn't get cleaned up. Stuff hangs out there. And I think there's a certain category of computer user is a little OCD, if you'll forgive me. A little, you know, wants everything tidy and neat, and it bothers this person that there's stuff in the registry. There's registry keys in there that are no longer in use. I don't like that. So they get a sea cleaner, and it cleans the registry, and everything should work wonderfully. There are problems. If the registry gets too big, more than 2 gigabytes, it'll fail. Yeah, just stops working. It's easy enough to damage the registry, and if that happens, Windows will stop working. And that's the problem with something like CCleaner or registry cleaner, because if it's too aggressive, it's like leeches. It could kill the patient. So it can't be too aggressive. So, but if it's not aggressive enough, there's no benefit. And frankly, even if it's just right, there's what's the benefit, right? You're removing old keys. There's no real benefit. It's voodoo. Now, even more, because it turns out CCleaner was bought by Avast last year, which you may know as a free antivirus, another bit of pseudoscience that people apply to their computer. Perfect match. Avast added features that made it for, there's a free version of CCleaner, a paid version. For the free version, there is something called active monitoring. We're watching all the time, make sure you're safe. And no privacy settings at all. And you couldn't disable active monitoring. So effectively, when you installed CCleaner, you were putting spyware on your machine that was sending back to the home office. We don't know what. Avast made it impossible for users to quit the software. CCleaner is popular. 2 billion downloads, 5 million downloads a week. That's how desperate people are. Leeches were really popular, too, in the 14th century. Big market in leeches. Actually, leeches are coming back, but that's another story. I don't want to get into that. Avast has pulled CCleaner for 5.45 after users, quote, expressed concerns over the privacy changes. We are currently working on separating out cleaning functionality from analytics reporting and offering more user control options, the company says, which will be remembered when CCleaner is closed. You know, you don't need it. Don't use it. It doesn't. Here's the rule. Here's the rule. You want to know the rule? We've discovered bacteria now. And science tells us that, a lot of these tools come from the bad old days of Windows 95, when really Windows did a terrible job of managing this stuff. Rule number one, use the most recent version of Windows, Windows 10, and keep it up to date. Because you know what? It does a really good job of managing all this stuff now. You don't need a disk optimizer. You don't need CCleaner. And in my opinion, you don't need an antivirus either. All of these tools that we used to use are really obsolete. Let Windows be Windows. Let go and let Windows, because it's going to do the right thing. The other rule that's, I think, I've kind of come to this over time, and I think it's really important, is install as little software on your machine as possible. As little software. Just put what you absolutely need on there. Don't put these little voodoo things on there, little utilities and helpers and fixes. Don't install programs you might use. Don't try stuff from the internet. Oh, this sounds interesting. Because everything you install on there makes the machine less reliable, potentially opens holes to bad guys, exploits, especially things like antiviruses, which are designed to work at the very lowest level of the machine, to really hook into the deepest part of the operating system, exactly where bad guys want to get. So if that software is poorly designed, and by the way, it happens all the time, it just becomes another avenue for viruses. It's like, but it's an antivirus. Yeah, except in this case, it's a virus highway. Install as little as possible. Only stuff you absolutely will use. And be really judicious about what more you put on a new machine. And let Windows be Windows, because, you know, it does a pretty good job. And you might want to consider whether you should be running CCleaner these days, since it not only does nothing in the first place, it's now a giant spy factory on your system. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number if you want to call. We're going to get to the phones on this lovely day. Kim Schaffer's here. She's ready to answer your call, get you ready for your appearance on national radio next. Leah Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you call right now. Operator is standing by.
I want somebody to make me over.
Demonology. Hello, Kim Schaffer.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Glad you're here today.
Glad to be here.
Yes.
Yes.
If you have any calls for me, I would be glad to take them at this point in the show.
I don't know. You might just have to talk.
Oh, no. I've run out of things to say.
Now, our good friend G. Scott's on the line
from
Finland, Minnesota.
Finland, Minnesota.
And he's got an Office 365 laggy issue that you might be able to help him with.
Okay. a little more medieval medicine.
Yes.
For the Tech Guy Show. Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome.
Hello, G. Scott.
Hey, Leo. How are we doing today?
I am doing swell. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I've got this Fast Surface Studio.
Oh, you bought one of them, huh?
I did.
I think it's you and me. The two of us have.
Yeah, pretty much.
they didn't sell a lot of them because they were really overpriced and underpowered. On the other hand, they're the coolest computer ever. This is the Microsoft Surface that looks like an all-in-one, looks like an iMac, but it has this hinge on it that lets you lay it down almost flat to 15 degrees, making it perfect for like, it looks like an artist's drafting table. Are you an artist? What did you get it for?
Not an artist. I do septic systems and design work, so I have to do layout projects, and it's nice to have the screen.
And
I can use the pen for a lot of that.
Do you use AutoCAD, or what kind of software do you use?
You know, I've got a Home Plan Pro. It's a $30 2D.
Oh, I know it, yeah.
And I've had it since my Windows 98 machine, and it's a great for what I do, dimensioning and
shape. It's perfect. Yeah, it's basically a blueprint, a 2D blueprint program, right?
Right. But I got this Fast machine, but Office 365 seems to be real laggy.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I know you paid $3,000 or something like that for this machine. And one would assume it's fast, but a lot of the cost of it is that beautiful 28-inch display, which is a really high-quality multi-touch display, because the internals, the guts of the Surface Studio, are not that super fast. In fact, one of the first things we did is modify it by putting in faster drives. It has a kind of a slow drive. So did you get the i7 edition? Did you get the high end?
I got the i7.
Okay.
The i7 with 16 gigs of RAM.
Okay. Well, that's pretty good. So the i7, which is Intel's, fastest processor, should be fast enough to run Office. It's not very challenging. Is it, when you say sluggish how? To load?
Like if I open a spreadsheet, I work with a design suite, so it's maybe a 20 tab spreadsheet.
Ooh, that's big. Okay,
that can take a minute sometimes to load. I look at the green square, it says Excel, and it really comes slow. And I'm wondering if I'm working in the cloud. I mean, I've got a 30 megabit. Fiber connection here.
Oh, so is the spreadsheet stored on OneDrive on the Microsoft Cloud, or is it stored locally on your hard drive?
No, I'm working right out of my dock.
All right. So the speed of the internet shouldn't matter. It's the hard drive. And this is, by the way, the first thing we did, because I found that the Surface Pro, despite the cost, was a little bit sluggish. And it ain't the processor, although you got a faster one than I did.
Right.
You got the i7. I only got the i5.
What you did.
Yeah. You remember that? Father Robert took it apart and he put in.
Yep.
So it has this cuckoo notion of a hybrid drive inside it, where it's got a small SSD and then a larger, slow 5400 RPM spinning drive. And Intel created this whole kind of goofy idea that the SSD, the solid state drive, would cache the slower spinning drive, and so the stuff you really needed would be fast off the SSD. I don't think that's a great solution either. So,
no.
What we did, and I didn't do it myself, so I don't know how hard this was. I don't think it's too hard. Is we opened that baby up, and we replaced the tiny SSD with a decent sized SSD. I think it's an M.2 NVMe connection, I think. And then, but there's a whole know-how. Father Robert did make a video of this. I don't know. Right. Have you seen that?
Yes, and I'm only 3 months into owning this thing, or 4 months. So do I want to go in before my warranty? I guess I got to kind of play that.
So. Yeah. So this goes back to December 2016, the end of the year, 2 years ago. I'm just looking at it right now, and he put in a new solid state drive, and then he put in the there's two drives in it, and I think he put a slower but much better solid state drive where the spinning drive was. So you don't need to. It's not okay. It's not fast enough to justify something really fast. But I think I remember buying kind of a middle of the line SSD for it as the second drive. So there are some tricks to it, and so you might want to watch what he did. So he put a M.2 960 Pro, I think, in as a solid. I can't remember what he did, but the details are on the know-how episode. I think it's episode 270. He did brain surgery, basically, to it. That, I can't guarantee you, is the problem, but Office should not be sluggish. Remember, a spreadsheet, there's a lot to that, especially a 20-tab spreadsheet. Is there a lot of recalculation and stuff going on in it, or is it just...
Yeah, and there's cross-sheet calculations.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a document.
It's a big document, but it could be I.O. is slowing it down. In fact, I would guess it is. It was a sluggish drive. It felt kind of sluggish to me. The other thing is 16 gigs of RAM, while that seems like a lot, if it's a really, really large spreadsheet, you might be good to have more. But I would say start with the drive upgrade. It wasn't an expensive upgrade because we didn't put top-of-the-line stuff in there. But I think that's worth doing. If you go to Twit, this is our podcast network, as you know, G. Scott, I don't have to tell you. Twit.tv/KH270 is where he describes this. And I think he even does it on the show. It's a video. You can see it on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/knowhow, you can see it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Robert was in the other day. Gee, Scott, it was kind of nice to see him. He was in here yesterday. I think he's going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
And then he's going.
I wanted to get down to his last screensavers when we were still in Tahoe. You know, we're in Tahoe till May, and I just couldn't make it down. So I'm going to have to go to Italy now, I think, to see him.
Well, he's going to be around till the end of the month, and he's doing a twit with me.
Yeah.
If you wanted to come visit. Yeah, let me see if I can find that. That twit, which episode it is? It's towards the end of the month, so he'll be in studio for that. So that would be, in fact, you know what? Everybody listening, everybody should come. Oh, you're back in Minnesota, yeah.
Well, you know, my wife heard you say that the other day. I think at the end of Twit or somewhere, and that she said you should fly and see him.
Yes, you should. It'll be August 26th. It's Father Robert and Ian Thompson all in studio. And we may get some more people. August 26th. Oh. It's also my last show before I leave for Europe. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We're both leaving for Europe, except I'm coming back. Although Robert did say to me when I saw him yesterday or on Friday, he said, you know, it turns out I'm going to be coming back a lot. He's got a lot of free time. He comes back for... DEF CON and Black Hat. He's coming back for, for Salesforce. He's going to be coming here many times a year. So if you coordinate with him, you probably can time it. So what months are you at Tahoe?
We head out of here. Usually we're in, there by Thanksgiving.
Oh.
And then we leave the end of April.
You spend winter here.
Yes.
But there's still snow in Tahoe. It's just not as bad as Minnesota. Is that it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I heard you were just up there.
Oh, it was beautiful. It's beautiful in the summer. We had fun on the lake. Yeah. Lisa posted pictures on, I think, on Facebook. I don't know if she put it on her Life of Lisa blog of Michael and his friend Tanner. What were they doing? They were, what do you call that? tubing, right? Behind a boat. So it's like a water ski boat.
Yeah,
and they pull these tubes, and they bounce in the air, and their legs fly akimbo. Yeah, it's not on her blog yet, but she posted it on her Facebook.
Yeah.
If you follow her on Facebook, you
can see. A lot of fun for kids.
Yeah, and yeah, I didn't do it. These old bones are not meant to bounce.
I hear you. I'm kind of in the same boat. Whether or not my wife would let me, you know, that's the second hurdle is bones and what the
wife
would
have. It's good to have somebody looking out for your best interest, G. Scott. We need that, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely appreciate some parental oversight.
Well, tell your wife that August 26th, Robert will be in studio, and that is for sure his last appearance on Twit for a while. Well, you know, that's the thing. If he comes out, you know, it's one of those things. This happens every time. It's one of those things where he says goodbye, we have a big party for him, and then he keeps coming back, you know, which would not be a bad thing at all. So I think we're going to see more of him than we thought.
Yeah. No, we'll see if we can pull that off. And like I say, if nothing else, my wife said, well, you know, we want to go ski the Dolomites.
Go to Switzerland. There you go. He's not far. And Rome is wonderful. Yeah. Forget Tahoe. Spend winters in Rome.
There you go.
Hey, I got to run. It's good to talk to you.
You too, Leo.
Thanks, G. Scott.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number on line two, Joy, Thousand Oaks. Hello, Joy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, well, I have this problem. I have a really old iMac, the rounded base.
Oh, yeah, the old Luxo lamp version, yeah.
Yeah, it's running 10.3 Panther, and I forgot the admin password. And I looked everywhere. I couldn't find it. So I kind of went into Terminal and typed some code that would pretend that it would be a fool the operating system into believing the computer's never been started before. So I get all these screens, and when I get to the last step of continue, it's grayed out. So then I found the original disk, and I put that in and tried to reset the password, but I think because it's so old, it automatically goes to dial-up modem, and it won't.
Okay, so this is why you really want to be careful. If you have a problem with your computer, just Googling and doing the first thing that shows up.
Right.
Right, and you've learned that lesson. It's actually, if you forget your password, it's really, really easy on Macintosh. You run the installer. Right?
Yeah, but I didn't have that then.
Well, you said you found the disk.
Yeah, I did. I finally found it
out. Yeah. You can also do it. I don't know on a Mac that old, but maybe the recovery mode, which is restart with and then hold down Command-R. Because what you want is in the utilities menu in the installer, there's a reset password that will just, you know, reset your password.
The original, when I did the startup disk, I did do the utilities and reset password, and then it started up like normal, and then that registration screen came up, and I can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it can't connect to the internet, and that's probably why.
Yeah, that could be. Do you, did you go into single user mode, Command-S, and...
No.
No, you didn't do that. Okay.
No. But I did do target mode because I have an old G4 laptop.
Ah, aren't you smart?
Yeah. And I can access, but I've tried a bunch of different things and I can't seem to get the modem to connect or whatever.
So does that old iMac have Wi-Fi built in?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, the modern installers, the first thing they do is say, all right, we need to get an internet connection. What's your Wi-Fi password? And it'll show you the Wi-Fi access points. But you don't see that on Panther, I guess.
No, I don't see anything on my...
No opportunity to connect it to the internet, huh?
No.
Yeah.
But when I restarted it the first time before I messed with Terminal, it would automatically restart with the modem. Dial-up modem.
Oh, isn't that funny? Boy, that's a blast from the past. So, So you'd be content if you could just reboot and reinstall the operating system. That would be okay with you.
There's one picture that was on the desktop that I really want, and I've transferred over a lot of the data because I can see it, but I was wondering if there's a way to go in with the target mode to reset something so that it will start up correctly.
Well, there may be. The other thing to try is Ethernet, is a hard wire. You have an Ethernet jack on that Luxo iMac, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I took it to the so-called Apple Genius, two of them, different times, and they tried to connect, and it wouldn't connect at all.
That's interesting. Maybe there is something more serious. You have, because you have Wi-Fi at home, you have a router that probably has an extra Ethernet port.
Yeah.
So what you did try that. You connected the Ethernet to the iMac. You went into the iMac. You shut it all the way down. You turned it on holding down Command and R.
No, I didn't do that.
Well, try. Again, this is so old, it may not even support that recovery mode anymore. But if that doesn't work, then put in the CD,
right,
and boot to that, and with it plugged in an Ethernet, the Mac should say, "Oh, good, I'm online," and it should copy over. You know, this in modern Macs is completely eliminated because the modern Mac, the first thing it says is, "Okay, give me your Wi-Fi password," and then if it can't find an operating system on its own hard drive because they now have recovery partitions like PCs, it will literally download the operating system from the internet.
Wow!
And install. I know. That's a much, much better solution. But you do. The good news is you do have that disk. I'm surprised the geniuses didn't try this.
They didn't even try target mode. That was my idea.
Yeah, that's good. What target mode is, you if you boot a Mac holding down the T key, it'll just treat it like a hard drive so that you can take another Mac, connect it via FireWire in this case, and although nowadays you'd use the Ethernet cable or a USB-C cable, and it will look like a hard drive, and you can then, that's the good news, you can get that desktop picture off and all that stuff.
No, I can't.
Why can't you?
I can't find it. I found all sorts of pictures, but not the one I wanted that was on the desktop.
Is it, when you say it's on the desktop, it's the wallpaper?
No, it's not a wallpaper.
Oh, it's sitting in the desktop folder.
Right. And no, it's just under the hard drive icon. I put a JPEG right underneath it.
So I could tell you, I'll tell you where that is, just so you can get it.
Okay.
So you're in the volume, whatever it is, usually Macintosh hard drive. Then there's a users folder under that. And then in the users folder, there's a folder called desktop. Anything you put, like, on the desktop underneath the hard drive icon or whatever is in that folder.
I don't see it. I only have three folders. One's a game, one's old files, and one's Word files. And I looked in there.
And you're looking in users, your name, /desktop.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I'm wondering now maybe your hard drive is having problems, or maybe there are some hardware issues with that, unfortunately. Yeah. That may be the problem. What color shirt was the genius wearing? No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
It's dark blue.
Is it a blue one? Because if it's not, it's not really a genius. It's just some guy saying he's a genius. Yeah, no. The geniuses used to be, in the early days of the Mac store, really geniuses. And I think that Apple's just expanded those stores so much, they're fewer geniuses. And maybe some of these guys are just like average, Best Buy Geek Squad type people.
They just know the new stuff. They don't know anything.
Yeah, they have no history. That's a good point. Yeah. They're trained. I mean, Apple really trains them, but they probably don't train them in what to do when a Luxo lamp iMac comes in.
Right.
I remember when those came out, Steve Jobs was so excited about them. The hinge in that thing, he said, we spent a year working on the hinge because so many hinges either get loose or are too tight, but this hinge is perfect. He really sold that hinge.
It still runs and works and everything. I just wish I had, waited to find, my original disc.
Yeah, it may. Yeah, yeah. It may be that it really is. There's something more seriously wrong with it. You should be able to plug in. This really should work. And I can't think of any reason, unless there's a physical hardware issue, maybe the hard drive itself. Plug the Ethernet cable into your router, into your iMac, shut it all the way down, put the install disk in, boot it up. The iMac should, there's nothing you need to do with an Ethernet connection and say, oh, yeah, I'm on the network, and everything should proceed from there. Go into Disk Utility, format the drive. You've already given up on getting that picture?
Yeah, I think so.
Format the drive and then install. And you might, this might be an opportunity to get more up-to-date than Panther. I don't know which the most recent version is for yours, but you can go to everymac.com and find out. And then get as up-to-date as you can. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, that's another thing probably the geniuses don't. Well, they should know because it's still good. There's a couple of reset things you might want to do. Command-Option-PR. You familiar with that? Resetting the PRAM. You might want to do that as well. Command-Option-PR. And what you do is you reboot, and then same thing. Shut down. Press the on switch. Command-Option-PR. Let it bong a couple of times. That's clearing the parameter RAM. That's not a bad thing to do. There's also a way to, I don't know if you need to clear the SMC. I don't even know if there is an SMC on that thing. You can run OS 10 Tiger, it says, is the most recent version.
Repair permissions. I think that was an
option. Yeah, it was a big one, repair permissions. I don't know if that's the problem. It's certainly if you're reinstalling. Leopard was the last. Somebody's saying Leopard was the last PowerPC. Yeah. I'm surprised the geniuses didn't try that. And I guess maybe their excuse is, well, the thing, you know, we don't support anything that old. IO Geek says, get Tinker Tool. I'm not sure what the problem really is with that desktop picture. She says it's just sitting on the desktop. She should be able to find it in her user folder, in the desktop folder. It could very well be that drive is you know, finally bit the dust. Yeah, it's kind of fun. On a Mac that old, you could use Tinker Tool. Wow, he's still updating it. You'd use Tinker Tool Classic for Mac OS X Puma, Jaguar, or Panther. Tinker Tool Classic Generation 2 for Tiger and Leopard. Tinker Tool 4 for Snow Leopard, Lion, or Mountain Lion. Tinker Tool 5 for Mavericks, Yosemite, and El Capitan. And Tinker Tool Current 6.21 for Sierra or High Sierra. Wow, I haven't had Tinker Tool on a system in a long time. Oh, we'll dedicate that to Lance Bass, NSYNC boy band member. Last night, he was so excited. He thought he had purchased the Brady Bunch house. And then along comes some major studio with deep pockets and steals it right out from under him. So sad. Such a sad story. No, Lance did not burn down the house. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. If you want to talk high tech. Karen in Ventura has called. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
I have an Android phone. The battery is dying, and I want to take my text messages with me.
Yeah.
And the tech support said that that's not possible.
Which Android phone do you have?
Yeah. Well, it has two names. At the top, it says Cricket, and at the bottom, it says ZTE.
Yeah, so Cricket is the wireless company. ZTE is the phone manufacturer. It's
okay.
A Chinese company. And you're using the messages app, the SMS text messaging app that came with the phone, I presume.
I don't know what kind it is, but I do have text messages.
Yeah. Yeah. Though, because you don't know what kind, it's almost certain that you didn't change it. Yeah. So, In a lot of cases, you can back it up, and that's the question. It's because of the ZTE phone. I'm not sure exactly what version of Android you're running and whether you can do it. There are programs you could download, and maybe this is the solution. Go to the Google Play Store and get a program called SMS, Backup and Restore. It should work.
You would like to know what version I have?
Well, yeah, what version? Do you know?
I know the model number. Oh, yeah. It's version 2.3.4.
Really?
That's what it says on the phone.
Android version 2.3.4?
Uh-huh.
Hmm. You've had this phone a long time, have you?
No, it was given to me.
Yeah.
And the battery's dying, so I want to switch to
Yeah, I'm not surprised. This is actually, wow. This is a very early version of Android, Gingerbread.
Oh.
And still might work. So you have a Play Store on there. Go to SMS Backup. There are a couple of them. Carbonite, our sponsor, actually has one. And those programs will let you back it up, back up your messages. And you should do that. That phone is so antiquated that you really want to update it. I mean, not only is the battery dying, the version of Android you're using is actually almost, I would say, safe to say, risky at this point. It's so old.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you going to get a new phone? What are you going to do?
I got a new one, but it disappeared with the charging cord. So I just found out, though, that I can't, according to the tech support, take my text with me. So I wanted to first.
You can. Okay. They just don't know how. And they don't. This is this is often the case with tech support. They've got a notebook in front of them, and they're looking. You probably can even hear them turning the pages, trying to find the answer, and they don't know. So you can. It's a really old version of Android, which in some cases is going to mean you can't install. You know, a lot of the apps on the Play Store won't even work on anything that old. But there are a number of SMS backup tools that you can use, and they're available for free to download from the Android store. I would start with SMS Backup and Restore. That's one of the best known. Carbonite makes one called SMS Backup. Find one of these programs, and it'll let you email all your text messages to you or back them up to another source or something like that. So there are quite a few of these. Quite a few of these, okay? SMS Backup by Carbonite, SMS Backup and Restore. SyncTech is one, but you're going to have to find one that'll, a lot of them, if you go to the install, part of the screen, it'll say, oh, can't run it on this phone because it's such an old phone. So you're going to have to keep trying, but one of them will work. One of them will work. Okay. And do get a new phone. It's time. I understand these things are vastly expensive, but if you go to Cricket, which is your wireless company, they will have an inexpensive or probably even free Android phone that, well, it won't be the latest and greatest, but it'll be a lot more recent than Gingerbread. That's pretty ancient. Roger, Santa Barbara. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Leo.
What can I do for you, my friend?
I have, first off, let me, don't ramble on, but I'm elderly. 75, and not very tech savvy or computer savvy. I have a Windows 7 machine desktop that I've had probably about 5 or so years, and I don't get any updates anymore. I don't believe it's supported, I believe.
No, that's not true. Windows 7 is still being updated, so this concerns me because you really do want those updates. I'm glad you called.
I haven't received some for probably a year or more.
Oh.
I mean, I don't turn it off anymore because, I used to turn it off and it would say, do not turn off your machine upgrading, 21
right.
of 24. It doesn't do that.
Yeah.
And so now I just keep it on sleep because when I do turn it off, it takes so long to get it, back on. Well, on sleep, it comes on, right away. But I've been told by other, literate people that, oh, no, They don't support those anymore.
Not true.
Some of the early ones.
Not true. You support, you're using Windows 7. They do support it. There have been issues with Windows 7 not getting updated, and that is certainly an issue because those updates protect you against hacks. And
yes.
As soon as that update comes out, the hackers go, they rub their hands and say, let's figure out what this problem is. So you want to get those updates on there. So there are a couple of possibilities. First of all, the first thing to do is go to the settings and make sure that updates are turned on and enabled, and even press the check updates button. You know how to do that. Windows key I will open the Windows settings, and then you click the update and security.
The little button with all of the flag on it or something?
Yeah, the little window. It looks like a window. Windows, yeah. It's called the Windows key. Hit that and I. That's just a shortcut. You can also go to the menu and do this. Check for updates and see what it says. If it's not working, I'm going to put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com to a Microsoft article on Windows update problems. There is a fix for some older versions of Windows 7, a little patch you can apply. It's kind of complicated, otherwise I'd do it over the air with you. You have to turn off auto updates, do the patch, then turn it back on. But I'm going to put a link at techguylabs.com. So go look at that link. It'll take a minute or two to get up there. I just put it in the chat room. And let's get those updates in because we need them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, well, let me talk about our sponsor. Actually, this would be a good time to do that. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. We love Quicken Loans. You know Quicken Loans. I know you do. They are the number one lender in the country in two ways. Number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years running, according to J.D. Power. That's a good way. And I think related to the second way they're number one, they are now the largest home lender in the country by volume as of last December. Big change. That's fantastic. You know, the number one guy for years was that big bank with the stagecoach and the whips. And I think people finally realized not the bad. That's where we got our home loan when we bought our house 4 years ago, Lisa and me. And it was a nightmare. It took us 2 months. We had it was a nightmare. They kept coming back saying, we need more documentation, more documentation, more. And Lisa's credit is superb. Mine's not so good, but we did it in Lisa's name. She's like 830 or 840, her FICO score. I mean, they still said, we need, it was crazy. Enter Rocket Mortgage. Next time, Rocket Mortgage. No question about it, from Quicken Loans. They have done some amazing things because they're very customer-focused. You know that. Dan Gilbert and his team are technologists. They're customer-focused. They want to make your experience good. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage in the first place. That's an entirely online mortgage approval process. No more going to the attic to get paperwork or anything like that. And they've added this thing called the power buying process. So you can get kind of qualified approval within a few minutes with Rocket Mortgage. You can get verified approval, the next step up, within 24 hours. And it's the same process. They verify your income, assets, and credit. You don't have to provide them with anything except a basic, you answer a couple of questions and give them permission. They have trusted relationships with all the financial institutions so they can get everything they need. They crunch the numbers. Then they give you verified approval. Now, that is awesome because that means you're basically equivalent of a cash buyer. When the seller sees that letter of verified approval means you're good for it. You got the loan, basically. So that's a huge advantage when you're in it's a competitive market now as a buyer. When you go in there, you're sitting pretty. But then there's the next step. After you get the verified approval, you qualify for their all-new Rate Shield approval. This is awesome. They will lock your rate. See, the problem is interest rates are ratcheting up right now, right? So there's this pressure as you're buying to get it done before the rate goes up again and you owe $10,000 more. So you want to – that there, you don't. There's enough anxiety in buying a home, your biggest purchase ever in your life. There's enough anxiety in that you don't want to add more. Rate Shield approval is great. It takes it out because it says once you've got the approval, okay, that rate's locked for up to 90 days while you shop. Can't go up. Cannot go up. It can go down, by the way. If rates go down, yes, they'll lower the rate, but it can never go up. So you win either way. It's exactly what you'd expect from the best mortgage lender in the country, Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage. To get started, it's simple. You go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. So here's what you need to remember. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. And we thank Dan and Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about, well, computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also call from outside that area. Just use Skype or something like that. Use Skype out and call a phone line in the United States, and it should be free. Last caller at the end of the hour was concerned. He thought Windows 7 had ended life. I know that's a had ended life. It actually it hasn't really ended life. Mainstream support has ended. It's very confused. Microsoft does not make this easy to understand. Actually, mainstream support ended in 2015. In fact, mainstream support for Windows 7 without Service Pack 1 ended in 2013. But that mainstream support is not what you're worried about. You're worried about extended support. You have to read the Microsoft Life Cycle FAQ to really understand what these different terms are. You want what you really care about. All you really care about as an end user of Microsoft Windows is, is Microsoft still patching it? Are they still doing fixes? Are they sending out, security updates? As long as you get security updates, you don't care. You really don't. When mainstream support ended, that basically meant that Microsoft wasn't going to sell PCs with Windows installed anymore. You can't buy one. They want you to use, and that's because Windows 8, which was a nightmare, and Windows 8.1, which was somewhat less of a nightmare, had replaced it. But really, I think anybody who was sensible stayed with Windows 7 until last year. Was it last year or was it 2 years ago? I think it's 2 years ago now. Microsoft started offering free upgrades to Windows 10, and I hope everybody took advantage of that. I know there was some reluctance at first. At the time, what I told people to do is, if you're not sure you want it, do it. That'll give you, permanent access to it, and you can always roll back to Windows 7. And then at a later date, even today, you could say, oh, I changed my mind. I want to go back to Windows 10. Windows 10, the reason Microsoft does this, it's not because they want to make more money. I mean, I know they want to make more money, but really it's because it's a better world for everybody if we're all on the same version of Windows. In, at least in their opinion, it's here are some of the benefits. One, developers know, okay, we're developing for Windows 10 PCs, and they can take advantage of the features. They can avoid features that are no longer supported. They know they have a stable place to develop for. That's what they call it, a platform. If you think about it, that's what a platform is, right? It's a stable place you can stand. Windows as a platform is very, very important. It's one of the reasons there are more applications for Windows than almost any others. Actually, iOS is probably caught up by now, right? iPhone and iPad. That'd be an interesting research study. Who has more applications, iOS or Windows? But iOS, also a steady platform. And one of the reasons iOS is so successful is Apple, iPhone, and iPad users are kind of automatically upgraded. 90% of them are using the most recent version of iOS. So developers know, when we write it, we're writing it for this. It's really helpful for them. It's also helpful from a security point of view. Well, it's both good and bad. It's good in the sense that Microsoft can say, we're going to focus on making sure Windows 10 stays secure. And if we find fixes, we're going to get it out to everybody. In fact, if you took that free upgrade to Windows 10, one of the things you agreed to is, I'm going to take all the patches pretty darn quickly. I won't defer them more than, I think, depending on the version, a year. Most home users can't defer them at all. So that's good. You're going to get those fixes. Here's the downside. There's two. One, bad guys know everybody's on Windows 10. They're developers too, People who write malware, they're another kind of developer. Not a very nice kind, but another kind of developer. So they have a stable platform to develop for too. They have a lot of machines they can go after if they can find flaws and exploits. The other problem is really Microsoft's problem, which is sometimes, this is what really scares people, I know, sometimes these patches break things. or worse, break your machine. Occasionally that'll happen. It's never happened to me. But I've had some of the updates have made things a little rocky, and then Microsoft comes along and fixes it. Apple's had this problem, too. Apple's put out updates to iOS that have really done bad things to iPhones and then fixed it quickly. There was one I almost did, and one of my coworkers came screaming down the hall and said, "Don't apply the patch!" I forgot what it did. It broke something. "Don't do it!" And I lifted my finger off the button in the nick of time. But generally, you want to do those patches because, as I was explaining to our caller, a patch is just a signal to the hackers, there's something wrong. Let's go look at that patch and figure out what's wrong and see if we can take advantage of it. So you do want to do those fixes. And if your machine has, for some reason, stopped getting updated, whether it's iOS, Android, Windows, or Macintosh, no matter what you're using, figure out why and make sure those updates, the updates must roll. You got to keep them flowing. Figure it out. I put a link in the show notes to a long tech article for Microsoft about why sometimes Windows 7 updates stop and what you can do about it. But Windows 7 is still in what they call extended support mode. In fact, Windows 7 will be in extended support mode until 2020. So that's the good news. You should be getting security patches to 2020. In 2020, January 14th, you're going to have to decide. It'll be like Windows XP and Windows Vista and Windows 95 before them. You'll have to decide, am I going to, you know, take the chance of just using this without any fixes? The good news is by that time, there have been so many flaws found and patched that it's probably a pretty solid operating system. You might get away with it. You might be okay. Windows 7, as long as you've got Service Pack 1 on it, will still get patches. Support and updates through 2020, the beginning of 2020. We should probably just say through the end of next year. That's maybe a little easier to remember. Through the end of next year. So now you're going to have to think about, do I want to go to Windows 10 or not? Unfortunately, now you have to buy it unless you buy a new machine. It's not expensive. I really like Windows 10. I'm very happy with it. I think it gets better each time. There have been some notorious upgrades that people have said broke things. There was the Spring Creators update, the fall, maybe it was a Fall Creators update last year. It just had some weird bugs. It broke all the cameras, even Microsoft's cameras built into its Surface laptops. Many of them stopped working. And if you had a Kindle, you plugged it in, boom, the machine would just crash. I don't know how that got by Microsoft's quality control, but it somehow did. They fixed it. So, you know, that's the argument for saying, well, I'm not going to do the patches today. Let's wait a week. I'll give you a week. Wait a week. If there's something like that, if there's some horrendous thing, you'll know. And it's going to take the bad guys more than a week to figure out what to do with these security flaws that Microsoft has exposed. So you get a week, okay? But don't wait much longer than that. It really is important to apply those patches. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's get going here. Want to get some calls in? Tech Guy Show, hour number two, episode 1512. Well, you don't expect reek. Somebody's saying, I bought it. I should have support forever. Well, you don't really expect that. If you bought a 1990 Volvo, there are no recalls. Windows 7, how old is Windows 7? It's pretty old. When did Windows 7 come out? I think typically they do 10 years. 10 years is a long time. You wouldn't expect a recall on a car that's 10 years old, would you? Windows 10, 7 rather, came out on July 2009, and they're going to end of life it in January 2020, so it's 11 years later. That seems like a decent amount of time. I don't think that's criminal. Hey, it's Chris Marquardt. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Did you fill those Lofoten spots yet?
Mm-hmm. one possibly, but...
Oh, man, we got to sell those. I'm going to sell it hard this week.
It's okay. If we don't get them full, we still have enough.
We want to get you the next tier, man.
That would be fun, yeah.
Yep. I have to say now, going through all those shots I did in our tests with the 50 millimeter, it really... It's a 42 megapixel sensor. It just looks good. I'm very happy.
It sings, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that great lens. It's a really good combination. So I'm kind of relieved. I feel like good. This is going to be.
You're warming up to it.
Warming
more
up to
more.
The idea. Yeah.
It'll awesome.
Be a good challenge. And I bought one of those cheap Olympus underwater, dustproof, waterproof cameras for the adventure stuff. It's not a great camera, but it's good enough.
you have my permission.
Yeah, just a little point and shoot for when we go in the water, because I'm not bringing that Leica lens and the A7 R2 in the water. That's for sure.
No, I wouldn't. No. I wouldn't.
So I wonder if I should get the A7 R3. What do you think? Do you know anything about those? You're a Canon. You're a big camera
boy. I'm married. I'm married to
Canon. I know.
But they are awesome cameras. I personally just can't be without my tilt shift lenses and without an optical viewfinder.
Yeah.
That's my 2 points.
Yeah. And I did get the Mark IV because of you, and I have to say it's a wonderful system, but gosh, it's so dang heavy. And I love this, just carrying this Sony body with this little 50 millimeter lens. It's just so, it's almost like a point and shoot. It's really nice.
Well, Photokina is upon us. We'll see.
That's true.
Full-frame mirrorless cameras, probably from Canon.
Canon's doing one. Yeah. Nikon, too, yeah. My friend who wanted to buy an 850 said, I might get the mirrorless.
The problem is, with the full-frame mirrorless, you're not really saving that much on weight because the lenses are still huge.
I know.
It's the same lenses, so you're not really saving that much.
We'll talk in a minute. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Ask Leo. We got a lot of lines open. I think people taking the afternoon off. So if you've been looking to get through and you've found it hard in the past, this is a good time to call. 888-827-5536. Daryl in Orange, California. Hello, Daryl.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I appreciate it so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
I listen to you quite often, and I really enjoy your show. You're doing a great job helping a lot of people. So thank you. Hopefully you could help me.
Thank you, Daryl. Thanks for your kind words.
Yes. Say I'm running Windows 8.1. And I've been fighting this for probably about 2 weeks now. It started off with an update that I got that they referred it to it as critical update.
Mm.
And after that, I had a black screen.
No, you see, I was just talking about that. Sometimes, in a while, an update can mess you up.
Right. So, but I've been fighting it ever since because I ran some component tests on the system to find out if I had a hardware problem. And that everything passed. I went through and ran an extensive test overnight and that type of thing. And then what I did was I went back to a different restore point and restored the system back to a prior one. Like I say, the one that I went back a couple, actually.
Yeah.
And brought it up, and things were working fine. And then it wanted to do an update, and I figured, well, they said it's critical. Hopefully now, it's fixed by now. So I went ahead and, of course, I don't think you can stop them anyway. They're going to do it no matter what.
You can still, in Windows 8.1, you can stop it. You could turn off updates. Now in Windows 10, they do force you to do those updates for good reason. Occasionally these problems are an issue.
Yeah, right. So it worked after that, and then I did the update, and I'll be darned. I let it do the update because I figured we need it, And then it came up after it let me log in then, so I didn't have the black screen. But it let me log in, and while it was logging in, all of a sudden it stopped and came up with a message that said, personalized settings not responding. And there I sat. Couldn't do a darn thing with it. And every time I was, I let it run and run and run. And then finally, after clicking on it enough times, it finally came up and said, do I want to wait or do I want to cancel it? So after 20 minutes or so, I finally just canceled it, went back and logged in again. And it just kept doing that same thing over and over. And so that's when I did the restore point. And I went back and restored it back to a older version, and it came up, and I accepted the updates again after it kept saying that it had to and it was going to restart on its own if I didn't do something. And so I'm on my last restore point that's listed on there. You know, it goes and it says, click it for more restore points. Well, I've already restored. One of the restores. Oh, that's right. One of the restores, when it came back up, it. Wait, I lost my train.
My problem with Windows System Restore, I know a lot of people love this, and it's kind of Microsoft doesn't really use it as much anymore in 10, is that it doesn't necessarily fix the problem. It just rolls you back to an earlier state. What we really want to figure out is what's going on. So the black screen after an update usually means you've got a incompatible video driver. It's pretty easy to fix. The personalized settings is a little more complicated. It sounds like... Do you have a network-attached computer or anything like that in there on your computer, like a network-attached storage or network drives, anything like that on your computer?
No, just a
standalone.
Well, if you're referring to a network, meaning that I'm have a router and I...
No, not on the internet, just like an internal network drive.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't have...
So I've seen that happen with those... So first of all, let's fix the black screen issue. And the first thing to do in future, I can't tell you exactly what's wrong, but I will tell you the steps you should probably take. And I will also, by the way, put a Microsoft support article in the show notes at techguylabs.com that describes some of the things to try. But in general, if a Windows update fails, the first thing to do is to get into a safe mode. So that is a little harder than it used to be, unfortunately.
Well, I did. That's how I was running the component tests and everything. I did. It wasn't a program I had.
So the screen worked in safe mode.
Say that again.
The screen worked in safe mode. It wasn't dark.
Yes, it did. Okay. Yeah, I was able to run all through all the component tests and everything. It went through and tested memory and all of the things that are available.
That confirms that the problem with the update was an incompatibility with your video driver. So,
One of the messages that I got that kind of concerned me is that after it got that personalized settings not responding, and I kept waiting on it to come up, it came up and said Windows Explorer.
Yeah.
Problem or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would expect. It's Windows Explorer doesn't start up, and it's usually when I've seen this is because you have a network attached drive.
Oh yeah, no, I don't.
But there are other things. I'll put also a Microsoft note about that problem, which involves, and I hate to say this, registry editing. I hate that. But this is kind of a nightmare. And I think some of this comes from using System Restore. System Restore, to me, ends up putting your system in an unknown state. It doesn't fix the problem. It just, in my opinion, complicates it. So if you had called immediately after you got the black screen, now we know what's wrong. It's a driver incompatibility because you can boot into safe mode and see your screen. Okay, that's fixable. You update the driver and everything's fixed. But now you've done this because you did System Restore. Now we got personalized settings not responding. That's a Windows Explorer issue. I would say get your Windows install disk and run the repair routine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I want to put there's two articles from Microsoft relating to these two independent issues, and I'll put both of them at techguylabs.com in the show notes. I've just pasted them into the chat room, and so people can you can go there and read the two different things that Microsoft recommends on this. I am not a fan of System Restore. Because I think what happens is it doesn't solve the initial problem, in this case a bad Windows driver, and it can then messes other things up. So first thing to do is go into safe mode and see if things are okay. Then you know it's a driver issue if it is. System Restore, it's I think telling that in Windows 10 the System Restore is not turned on. It's still there, but they turn it off by default. Why would Microsoft do that? Well, in my opinion, because it's not a good thing to do. What do you want to talk about today, Mr. Marquardt?
I want to go slightly outside the realm of creativity and photo technology and talk about cameras and cars.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So a bit of a discussion thing here.
Okay. We have many cameras in our lives these days.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Many, many, many. Pokemon Go Community Day, August 11th and 12th.
Oh, that's right. You're still a player.
I know. I'm back. I'm back into it.
Really?
Yeah, it's silly. It's just something to do while you're walking.
I never really fell into that.
No, you've got a camera.
For some reason.
You have a camera. That's the thing. I wish I hadn't, because now I've got to stop doing it so that I will use my camera and pay attention to what's going on instead of catching Pokemon as I wander around. It should be really looking for great shots.
Isn't there a photography element somewhere in there?
I think there is. Do not play Pokemon Go. Well, if you're a photographer, you should be looking at the world.
What was the predecessor of Pokemon Go?
The Niantic game.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember. Yeah, it's basically another version.
I used to play that for a while.
And I think that there's a Walking Dead version of Pokemon Go out now.
Really?
There's going to be if it's not out yet.
Well, wait till we all have our AR goggles. Then
I know nobody will be alert
even
at
further.
All. Yeah.
You'll be just walking around among zombies.
Yeah. The Walking Dead, our world, is that it? Zombie apocalypse. AR zombie, no. Maybe it's not out yet. There's going to be. And then there's going to be a Harry Potter Pokemon Go, too. They're white labeling the engine, Niantic is.
Smart.
Oh, yeah.
Smart. Licensing money coming in.
Oh, boy. Mama, don't take my Kodachrome away. It's Chris Marquardt, the Kodachrome man, our photo guy, a film buff. He's written a whole book on using Kodachrome and other film cameras. And he's also an expert in the creativity and interesting things you could do with cameras. Hello, Chris Marquardt. Good to see you. Oh, let me turn on your mic. That would help. Now he's here.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hey, tell me about Lofoten. When you're going in September up to the Arctic Circle.
Right. We're going for 9 days starting September 8th to right above the Arctic Circle. In September, Lofoten is this archipelago up in northern Norway. It's just one of my favorite places in the world. We've been there several times, even on my own vacation without photography groups, but I want to go there again. And we have two seats left open at this point.
Nice.
So two spots. And they're not too taxing. We have a little bit of walking, a little bit of hiking, but in general, we'll be mostly in vehicles, going to interesting places, taking photos. So you can stop anywhere there and get an amazing photo. It's just so beautiful there.
That's my dream.
And the Northern Lights, of course.
To go on a photo expedition with this guy right here. Find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com. That's this podcast. It's Tips from the Top Floor and His workshops are at Discover the Top Floor. So let's talk photography. What's up in your world? What's new?
I this time I didn't want to talk about photography per se, but about cameras and about a special case of cameras, cameras in cars. Because a year ago, I got a new car, and the car before that I had for 12 years, and that had no camera in it whatsoever. And now I looked into, well, I realized there are cameras in this new car, and what do they do? What are they there for? And I think a lot of people would be surprised how much photography is now part, or videography is now part of your daily commute.
Are you talking about like my backup camera? What kind of
the backup camera is the first one that was like, okay, this is a godsend.
It really is. I can't like drive a car without one anymore.
it goes even further that some cars now have cameras that look all around, and they composite a picture that looks like you're looking at the car from the top down.
That is so weird. My Audi did that, and I don't understand how it does it, because you see your car and you see everything around it as if there's a drone hovering above you.
Exactly. It does a lot of nifty geometric distortion of several cameras, and kind of it works really well. So when you park and there's something behind you, you will see that.
You know right where the lines are. You know right where the car's around you. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. Another one that I recently installed, a dash cam, and a lot of people doing this now. We're talking, I mean, you can get those for like $50. So we're not in expensive territory here. Just to be, you know, there's weird people on the road sometimes. So you might want to have some documentation.
Well, yeah, and if you have an accident, then...
Or if you're in an accident some insurance fraud thing or whatever. I mean, there's lots of...
It's good to have. I haven't used... I got one about 6 months ago. I got an Owly, and I haven't used it. In fact, there was a case where I could have used it because a car kicked a rock back and chipped my windshield. And if I'd only thought to... You know, because you have to tell it, okay, capture that last minute or last 30 seconds, and I didn't think of it. But
well, the one I have, it does like kind of cyclic recording, so it overwrites old stuff on the card.
Oh, yeah.
And I have 24 hours. It keeps recording all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a fun little thing and a bit of peace of mind.
Yeah.
Another place where cameras are going to come pretty soon is as replacements for rear view mirrors. The first, and they did trials, but it was never kind of in a regular car. The upcoming, I think it's the Audi SUV, an electric SUV, is going to have cameras for rear view mirrors. Going to be out there, but they can be so much smaller now, so much less drag. And then they have screens in the side doors, in the front doors. So you still look where the mirror used to be, but then you see the screen instead of the mirror image, and it reduces drag because you can make this much smaller than a mirror.
I trace this all back to the release of the iPhone in 2007, because what happened was the iPhone had a camera, and it just spurred companies like Sony and others to improve the little tiny sensors and make these less and less expensive, improve their manufacturing technology. And now, if you think about it, there are cameras everywhere. I, for instance, thought I'd have a camera in my house or cameras outside my house. I thought, oh, that's for paranoid people. And I live in a safe neighborhood. But it's really nice to have a camera on your doorbell, see who's ringing the door. We check on the cats inside the house. We check on the cats outside the house. It's really handy.
And it is,
if you walk around, you're going to see there are cameras everywhere now.
Right. Absolutely. And I mean, those sensors are getting smaller, and they're getting cheaper with good image quality.
Not good for the paranoid.
Yeah, you kind of have to keep a cool head about it. But in the car, one really helpful thing are the assistive systems that use the camera. For example, the lane assist. What my car does now is it helps you keep the car in the lane. So it gives a little steering impulse left and right. If it sees the lines to veer off to the side, then it tries to follow those and uses a camera to do that.
That's right.
So there's image recognition in there, the combination with AI, these kind of things. Another thing that I recently saw is a Swedish company is building a 26-ton truck that is remote operated. Of course, it has lots of cameras.
The driver's sitting in a lounge chair somewhere underground.
Well, one driver operating like five of those at the same time.
Oh, no, so that's crazy.
It's a driverless autonomous kind of thing.
But there is in a general, human. Yeah. Yeah.
In general, autonomy, if you look at a Tesla has eight cameras built in. So that there's a lot of image recognition going on there. And one thing that I just recently came across is OpenPilot by a company called Comma.ai. And they have just built a system. I'm not sure if it's out of beta yet, but they have built a system that allows you to retrofit any Toyota and some Hondas, I think, with a self-driving feature. So you could. It's an open source thing. You can kind of retrofit that into plug it into some ports, and then make your Toyota into a self-driving car. And there's all camera based. So we are in interesting times and lots of cameras, and this is not the end. There will be more.
What a world we live in. And if you don't like the idea of being observed at all times, you're going to have to move to the woods, because what's it like in Germany? I know in England, there are very few places you can go in London where there are not half a dozen cameras looking at you.
Not as bad here, but in some bigger cities, I'd say it's probably getting to that point.
Germans have always been more privacy concerned than others.
That is very true.
Which is odd because you bathe naked together, but
Google Street View in Germany, you will see plenty of pixelated houses because people don't want their houses.
We call it blurmini.
Yeah.
Because you have the right to blur out pictures of your house from the street, which, by the way, anybody walking by is going to see. It's in public.
Of course it is.
Kind of funny. Well, the cameras are here to stay, I'm sorry to say. So my friend Colleen was going to build a special collar because my ex-wife didn't like to come into the studio because she didn't want to be on camera. And the collar was an infrared light, so you couldn't see it, but they blind the camera. You just look like a giant glowing ball around your head of infrared light. I thought that may be a product somebody should be working on right now so we could all be invisible to the cameras.
Camouflage.
Camouflage. Chris Marquardt is at discoverthetopfloor.com. Don't forget, we're still taking pictures for our assignment, which is shoe.
The shoe assignment.
Shoe. Take a picture, submit it to our tech guy group on Flickr, and we have a few more weeks. I did one. Now you can do one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Shoo. Yeah, you're right. It kind of crept up on us, but there's just cameras everywhere. Unbelievable. Eight cameras in the Tesla. I forgot about that. That's the level two hardware.
They're not all activated at this point, but
I'm specking out a Model 3 because my lease runs out in a year. And if you pay an additional $3,000, that means that at some point in the future, it could be fully autonomous. It's like silly. And they say, but if you don't do it when you buy it, it'll cost $5,000. But you're kind of gambling that they're actually going to do it, because otherwise you're not getting anything.
You're gambling on how fast the technical development will be.
I guess the $3,000 maybe puts more cameras in, or more mounts for cameras, or a better processor or something. I don't know.
More it's just an artificial limitation.
Or it's just Elon's money.
Money to Elon. My car does lane assist, and it does it not really that good, but it's gives me a little bit of a feeling.
I like it.
Sure.
When I don't drive the Tesla, I don't trust the Tesla, because after all the news and stuff, I really and they by the way stepped up the warnings not to take your hands off the wheel.
Right.
I feel like safer if I've got lane assist on. And the autopilot cruise control on, it's safer. I'm less likely to miss something, and I'm still paying attention and driving.
One of the interesting things of OpenPilot by Comma AI, the retrofit Toyota thing, is that it's kind of an off the shelf box with a Linux on it or something, and it has a camera pointing at the driver, and it does attention detection.
That's the way to do it.
And it will let you keep your hands off the wheel. As long as you keep your eyes on the road.
That's what the Cadillac CT6 does.
Exactly. So you can drive for hundreds of miles on the highway without your hands on the wheel.
Yeah.
But you have to keep the attention, otherwise it'll tell you.
Yeah, it was. I drove the Cadillac, and it was actually hard because we wanted to show that because you know your hands aren't on the wheel, but in order to get the warning system, and by the way, it vibrates the seat really dramatically, mm-hmm. and it does all sorts of stuff to wake you up. You have to cover your eyes or look away. And I'm driving at highway speeds, and I could not bring myself to do it. So finally what I did is I covered my eyes, but I peeked through my hands.
There's an education process taking place.
You don't want to look away from the highway.
It'll take a while. It will take a while until we get used to that. And then everyone will look back and say, what? You had to hold that wheel in your hands, and you had to press a pedal? And
oh, man. It's nice because it's a capacitive sensor, so... You really, when you're doing it.
On the wheel?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, mine yeah. needs a kind of physical input.
Yeah, that's the same with the Tesla. And it's really kind of annoying. So let me see if I can find the part where I cover my eyes here. Because it was challenging not to look while we're driving.
Oh, yeah, I can tell. Yeah. You're a good driver. You're having your eyes
I don't want to cover my eyes. I don't want to. Look away. So there's the camera. I think this is...
Sure, why
come
not?
On!
So no hands on the wheel.
This is the Cadillac CTS?
CT6.
CT6, yes.
And
this is their top-of-the-line model. Other manufacturers do it.
There's the that light is telling you that it's
keep your hands on
that
the
you're
wheel.
On autopilot.
Because it's a little harder to actually hold on to the wheel and pick here. If it slows
down,
know.
There's somewhere in this video
slow down, it'll maintain
covering
the distance,
up my
and it'll
eyes.
Even come to a complete stop and resume automatically.
I have to say, I like this a little better than Tesla's.
It was pretty cool.
And actually,
it's a pretty cool system.
I like this.
We live in interesting times.
We sure do. Hey, thank you, Chris.
Absolutely. Talk to you again in a week.
See ya. Bye bye. Isn't this the song from that Cialis ad? I think it is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Makes me feel manly to hear it. 8888, ask Leo. Line 2, we go. Paul in Orange County. Hello, Paul.
How are you doing, Leo?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Good. I have a Lenovo laptop.
Yes.
And has a built-in SSD 256 gig.
Yep.
And I want to upgrade to 1 terabyte.
Oh, good.
And my pass, I always just do a cloning of the 2 drive and boom, pop it in there with the external USB case.
Yes.
While I was doing this, find out that because they have different disk sector size, cloning will not work.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I know. So I really don't want to install a new hard drive, load the OS, load the app, load the data. What do you recommend in this case?
Well, you need cloning software that isn't so sensitive to disk sector size. So you're using a very low-level cloning program that goes sector by sector. And of course, that means everything has to match perfectly.
That's right.
But you can get cloning software that operates more at the file system level. Or less sector specific, and then it won't matter what the drive geometry is at all. I'm not sure. Did the manufacturer of the new drive do they offer software for cloning?
No, it's a Samsung SSD M.2.
Should check because most drive manufacturers. By the way, that's what I use as well. The Samsung EVO. SSDs are very good. You should. I bet you they do have disk tools for this. And the question is, if their disk tool is sector cloning, it's SSD tools and software at Samsung.com. And let me just look at the. They call it Magician. Samsung Magician software. And the question is, does Magician do a sector copy, which normally is kind of what you want to do if they're, the standard 4,096-byte sectors. But it is nowadays drive geometries are all over the place. And
that's right.
Yeah.
I always use Acronis. It's done a great job. But
Acronis should do it. It doesn't do it either.
No. They want to do an image and apply the image to drive. And when you do that, creates a problem on the OS license sometimes, and 2, motherboard, and it creates a problem for that too as well.
So it isn't Magician. It's called Samsung Data Migration Software for Consumer SSD. And that I would check to see. Yeah. Cronus is maybe too high level, right? It's because it's doing an image copy. You want something maybe it's in the middle that will get the master boot record or the you know the non file system parts of this. Let me just see if the Samsung. I'm just looking at the manual for their data migration software. I would check that and see, given that it's made by the company that made the new hard drive. It's got to understand that there's these potential issues.
Right.
And I would imagine handle it. So that's the first thing I do. And the nice thing is it's free from Samsung.com. If you Googled Samsung data migration, SSD data migration, you'll find it. Give that a try.
Awesome.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Yeah, this is a normal procedure. You want to put a new drive. By the way, those Lenovos, one of the reasons I like Lenovos, the ThinkPads in particular, the ones I recommend, and I own a couple myself, is they are upgradable. If you buy one of those new MacBooks, everything's soldered in. Nothing's upgradable. You can't upgrade the hard drive. You can't upgrade the memory. You have to take it to Apple, upgrade the battery, because it's glued into the case. So Apple actually, I think, replaces more than just the battery when they're doing a battery upgrade, which makes it very expensive. The hard drive and the memory are soldered onto the motherboard. Normal, they're surface mounted onto the motherboard. They're not even, you know, they're one of the chips on a motherboard, on the logic board. So you can't, there's nothing you could do to upgrade those things. Fortunately, there are still companies that make PCs that are upgradable. And Lenovo ThinkPads are kind of famous for how easily you can upgrade the keyboard, the trackpad, the RAM, even the screen. It's a pretty strong argument, frankly, for Lenovo ThinkPads. I really like them a lot. Mark, Lake Havasu, Arizona. Hello, Mark.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing? Welcome.
Pretty good. We're on the 40 heading out there, so sorry about the background noise.
Oh, no, I'm jealous. That's awesome. Have fun.
Thank you. I have a question about my Toshiba Cosmio. It's a 2009.
Yep.
8, 505.
Yep.
Now, I'm upgrading that from Windows 7 to Windows 10. However, I just wanted to know, do I wipe the entire hard drive and start fresh on Windows 10 or upgrade it through?
It used to be for years our recommendation that you do what you're calling which is a clean install.
Yeah.
Because it's a pain because you have to start over, rebuild it and everything. And I still like the clean install, but I have to say Microsoft has worked very hard to improve the way it does these upgrades so that the clean install I don't think is necessary anymore. And in fact, I upgraded a number of machines from Windows 7 to 10 without a clean install, just putting Windows 10 on top of it, and it did a great job. So what I would suggest is, because it's so much easier, you don't have to reinstall programs, you don't have to back up your data. Do backup just in case, because things can happen. But just do it in place. Install on top of it. If you have any problems, then maybe go back and do a clean install. But my experience has been very positive with that Windows 10 upgrade. It's a pretty straightforward
awesome
thing. Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Enjoy. Where are you going?
Thank you. Back home, actually.
All right. Well, safe travels. I appreciate your calling. It's nice to hear from you. From Lake Havasu. Yeah, this used to be, I mean, this was a standard recommendation. Never install an operating system on top of an old one. If you're doing the upgrade, even though every company, Mac and PC, says, oh, no, you can just upgrade on top. It was just a recipe for a disaster. But I have to say, the Windows 7 or 8 to 10 upgrade, Microsoft's done a lot to, you know, take the old operating system and move it aside. In fact, one of the pieces of advice is after you do the install, once everything's working fine, you'll find that the old Windows version folder that has everything in it, you can delete that after you're sure everything's fine. And so that's what they do. And Mac OS does the same thing now. They instead of saying, oh, we're going to leave everything there and just replace the files we need to, they move the whole folder away into a backup spot and install a clean version. So in effect, nowadays, with Mac OS and Windows 10, you're doing a clean install, basically. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a break. More calls after this. And a PC guy is absolutely right. Best way to delete the old Windows files is to use the Windows disk cleanup routine because it understands that. You have to press the what is it? The advanced. Let me run it here. It's not in the basic cleanup. Select the drive you want to clean up. And then clean up system files. That's what you have to do. Press the button that says clean up system files. And it will tell you if you have the old system there or not. And if you do, then you want to use that tool to get rid of it. You're absolutely right, PC guy.
Should have mentioned that.
I still think, you know, if you have the time and the luxury of it, the clean install is a great thing to do. But essentially, that's what they're doing these days. They're Windows Update cleanup, Windows Defender antivirus, upgrade logs, downloaded program files. Yeah, see, this came with Windows 10, so I don't have that old stuff. Windows Update cleanup. I'm going to do that. Windows Defender cleanup. Windows upgrade log files, downloaded program files, temporary internet files. That's the biggest one so far. 20 megabytes. System created Windows error reports. 185, you know, K. It's not. Delivery optimization files. Ah, yeah, get rid of that. Temporary files, recycle bin. So all told, that's 7 gigs. That's not bad. But let Windows do it, right? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality, you know, all that stuff, all the tech with the chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo is my number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And let's see who called. From Pleasantville, New York. Ah, I see Bob is on the line. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Leo. Nice to talk to you.
Welcome.
I have a problem. And first of all, I don't want you to feel bad if you can't help me with this, because I went out and I bit the bullet and ordered a 4-in-1 EcoTank last night, my printer. So
good. That's our sponsor. Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm tired of paying these exorbitant ink prices. But the reason I'd like to fix this is that my Epson Workforce 5790 has been very reliable, and I've enjoyed it. But I have been getting an error code 0x97, and I did everything I could find on the Internet. I reinstalled firmware, software, cleaned the heads, and it seems to me I have a corrupted file somewhere, and I would love to fix it, just to pass it on to someone, because it's otherwise a very good printer.
Yeah, I have a Workforce Pro. I love those printers. So you're saying you're getting the error message on the computer, or are you getting it on the screen of the printer?
On the LCD screen of the printer.
And, I don't, you know, I'll be honest, I don't know. And, you know, that's a position I don't want to get into, of knowing what each error code is for every printer made. So I think I'm going to defer to the folks at Epson. In fact, this is definitely a call. Epson has very good tech support. This is definitely a call to them.
I did go on the website, and I did everything they suggest. I'm wondering, could I have a corrupted file in Windows 10 that can be causing this?
It seems unlikely. If it's on the LCD on the printer, it probably, I mean, this is completely, because I don't know what that error code corresponds to. It could be a lot of different things. It's unlikely that it's the computer itself. Much more likely something's going on with the printer.
Turn it back on and clean the heads and so forth. But all righty.
It was Epson. Let me just say it again for the chat room. It was Epson error code 0x97, you said?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, 0x, which means it's hex. It's a warning. There's problem with the internal hardware. Could be caused by a motherboard failure or other interior parts. Had the printer been unused for some time?
No, I use it every day.
So it just started all of a sudden at once.
Yes, and sometimes I was able to correct it by cleaning the heads, and I only use Epson's ink.
Yeah.
I don't use a third.
That is exactly, that's one of the things, but you hear what it's saying, OX97 is a hardware failure.
Okay.
That usually means, and it's an older printer, that there's something more serious wrong.
Okay.
I'm going to put in the show notes a article that I found from catchsupplies.com that describes error 97 and a couple of things you can do. But according to Epson, that error code 0x97 is a hardware failure. It's kind of a generic error code. It's the printer basically saying, I can't go on. I don't know what's going on, but I know I can't go on. So I don't think it's probably something like an ink head problem, because printers, inkjet printers are you know, pretty familiar with that and know what to do. It's much more likely there's some, you know, firmware error. It may be the fix involves restoring the firmware or downloading new firmware, installing it. There is a way to kind of clear it, you might try, which is turning off the printer, unplugging it, disconnecting everything from the printer if you've got a USB cable or whatever, disconnecting everything. Let it sit for a few minutes. Press and hold the power button for 60 seconds. This is weird, but this is what they say. Even though it's unplugged, nothing's going to happen, right? But you're pressing and holding it. Maybe that discharges some sort of non-volatile memory. After a minute, continue to hold the power button down. Don't release it. Then plug in the power cord and continue to hold it for another minute. And then release it. See if that sounds like that. My guess from my knowledge of hardware is that's designed to clear some non-volatile memory that may have errors in it. You know, really, this printer, like a lot of things, is actually a computer. There's a microprocessor in it. There's software. It's stored in a non-volatile area that it loads each time you turn it on. That's why it then goes through, as you probably are familiar with all printers, they go through kind of a physical check of the hardware. You'll hear rollers turning and platens spinning and gears whirring. And then it comes on and says, okay, I'm ready to go. That's very much like the power on self-test on a computer. And if something goes wrong in that, the printer doesn't have much recourse except to say, hey, something's wrong. I don't know what it is. It's an error 97. You fix it. So there's a few things. I'll put some more suggestions in the show notes. TechGuyLabs.com. I should mention that because that website we keep for you entirely so that you don't have to write anything down. I can say things like I just did. Well, go look at the website. We put a link up there. And it's free. There's no sign up. You don't have to pay a fee to get access to it. Just you go there in your browser. TechGuyLabs.com. And I do have to tip of the hat to James DeRuvo, who's writing this all down as we talk. Sam in Carlsbad, California. Hello, Sam.
Hey, how are we doing, Leo? Good to talk to you again.
It's good to talk to you again. What can I do for you?
Yes, sir. I have an Aries. I just picked it up, a modem Wi-Fi dual.
Okay.
And I had it set up, and I'm looking at the manual because my blue LED lighting is all on blue, solid. But the bottom two, and I believe one symbol stands for the Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah.
And the other one looks like a triple line, like a little speaker.
Yeah, typically. So this is a cable modem.
Okay.
And the Aris, A-R-R-I-S. And what these do is they plug into your cable, right? Your coaxial coming out in the wall, just like we put in a TV. But if you put it in the cable modem and you have arranged for cable internet, that modem converts it into Ethernet, the standard computer networking protocol. And
all
you
right.
And take an Ethernet cable out of that and plug it into a Wi-Fi router or your computer, whatever. It's now data. The lights on the front, and they vary depending on which model Aris, but there are a few things that the lights say. The first thing, there's going to be a light that says, yes, I am connected to the cable company and I have internet access. That will be solid, usually, if you've got internet access. That one does not blink. If it's off, then you're not getting internet access. And usually there's a little icon below it that, you know, it's kind of indecipherable, but if you think about it, oh, maybe that means I've connected. It's connected back. Then there's a link light. All network hardware have these link lights. And the link light will be solid if a computer is plugged into the Ethernet port. And then if data is going back and forth, it will blink. Most cable modems also have uplink and downlink lights. The uplink light means you're connected to the cable service. The downlink light means you're connected to a computer. So what you kind of need to do is look at the status light description in the manual for your modem. It'll tell you what those lights mean, and that's the best way to understand what's going on. So there's a power light that's off or on. There's a downstream light that means I can't get connected to the internet. There's an
That's solid, good.
There's an upstream light. You would want to see both the downstream and the upstream green. You don't want to see flashing. You want to see solid green.
Well, these are all blue. But in the manual, it says they all should be blue.
Okay, green, blue. That's why you got to look at the manual. It depends.
6950 model, sir.
Yeah, okay. So, there's different models, and that's the issue. So you should follow what it says in the manual. And if it doesn't get a connection to the cable provider, then that's a call to them. If it's not connecting to your computer, then you want to make sure you've got a good cable, that your router's working and all of that stuff. But really, those lights are there to help you understand how, what the cable, and it's pretty a primitive system, obviously. A more modern or a more expensive, maybe, cable modem might have an LCD that gives you more information, like error code 0x97, Computers are terrible at communicating to humans. You've realized this by now. Partly that's because computers are not smart. They're boxes of rocks that are animated by electricity and are trying desperately to understand what's gone wrong, and they're giving you what they can, but really only a human can put the pieces together and figure it out. Look at your manual, look at the lights, and maybe that'll help you. If you want, tell you what, hang on, I have to take a break. I'll talk to you during the break, and maybe I can help you with a little bit more, but that's the best I can do at this moment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, more of your calls coming up in just a bit. Stay right here. All right, so I'm sorry I had to wrap that up,
Leo.
Sam. But thanks for hanging on. So, what are you getting?
Right now, I'm looking at my manual, and it says here those two lights. One means 2.4 gigahertz wireless.
Awesome. Okay, so let me stop right there. So this is a cable modem plus a Wi-Fi router.
That's correct.
Okay, that means more lights and more things that can go wrong. Okay. Tell me again the model number so I can look at this too.
It's 6950.
Okay. That's it. By the way, I love these. These surfboards are great.
I do.
Yeah. So tell me what lights you're seeing.
I'm seeing, they're all solid blue.
Okay.
And except for that one symbol that looks like a Wi-Fi signal, the diagram, and it shows that means 2.4 gigahertz wireless, and the bottom one says it's a 5 gigahertz wireless.
Yeah, so this is a dual band or a tri-band router. That means it does both frequencies. Yeah. So that's good. That's what you want.
I originally had the 6183, and that one wasn't working out too well because it wasn't a dual.
Yeah, it's really nice to have 5 gigahertz these days. The 2.4 gigahertz band is so crowded. So what's not working? What's happening? You're not getting online? Or?
Working fine, to tell you the truth. In fact, there's a lot better.
Oh, good.
But those two lights just keep, because I got it right here.
They're blinking. That just means there's network activity. That's called a link light. They're solid when it's connected, but they blink when data is being transferred. That's okay.
I was thinking that might be the...
Yeah, that's okay. Those are on almost all network devices, even, networking cards and a PC, there'll be these link lights. And the blinking means I'm seeing data. It's coming, it's going. I'm doing something. That's good. That's what you want.
Okay.
Good going. I'm glad you're not having any problems. Yeah, Aris makes nice stuff.
You know what? If it wasn't for you, I want to be having this because listening to you and I spoke to you a couple weeks ago about it, and you recommend the Aris, and right now I'm very happy with it.
Excellent. I'm so glad it's helped your problems.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, Sam. I'm here for you.
Your wife.
Thanks. Take care.
We're going to miss you.
Oh, it's not for a few weeks, but I can't wait. Yeah, I'm excited. Take care. Sam's cute. It's blinking. Is that okay? Yeah, it's okay. No harm, no foul. Yeah, he's got send-receive lights, which are the link lights. So those send-receive lights should blink. And then the 2.4 and the 2.5. Oh, actually, no. The send receive should be solid. That's interesting. So they aren't linked lights. Huh. Yeah, I can see why it's confused. The manual's not very clear. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I only come out in the daytime, actually. I'm fast asleep at night. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. When I was a younger geek, I stayed up all night, right? That's what geeks do, right? We stay up because the best time to be coding or soldering or assembling is about 3 a.m. when everything's quiet. Because the worst thing is you're putting something together or you're writing some code and the phone rings or somebody talks to you and it all goes out of your head. What was I doing? I don't remember. Cheryl, Yorba Linda, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Leo. I'm going to buy a Motorola G6, and I can get one locked from Verizon or an unlocked one from Best Buy, and I wondered which would be best because I read about the difference between them, but I don't quite understand.
Yeah, these are great phones, by the way. You're going to be very happy with it.
Oh, great.
Motorola makes really excellent kind of mid-range or low-price hardware. So the lock is, sometimes we call it a carrier lock. It is typically a carrier will lock the phone, Verizon in this case, to Verizon because what they don't want you to do is take the phone and go across the street to T-Mobile. So if you buy a locked phone from Verizon, you have to use it with Verizon. Verizon will unlock it, by the way. Usually there's some rules, but the FCC says to all of these companies, you gotta, if somebody buys a phone outright, are you going to pay a monthly fee to Verizon or are you going to buy it outright?
I'm going to buy it outright.
Yeah. If somebody buys a phone outright, they own that. The FCC has told these companies, you can't lock it. They bought the phone. The locking made sense when you would get a phone for free or subsidized. You'd pay a little bit towards the phone price, and then you'd pay it off over 2 years. Well, that makes sense. They'd lock it because they don't want you to get a free phone and then go across the street. But you're not getting a free phone. You're buying it outright. If you buy it factory unlocked, that just means there's no lock on it at all, and you can bring it to anywhere you want. Is it more expensive for the factory unlocked?
No, they're exactly the same.
Then generally, I'd say get the unlocked. Do make sure when you go to Best Buy and you get that it will work with Verizon. I'm sure it will, but just verify that.
Okay.
Because it was more of a problem in the old days, where Verizon and Sprint would use a technology that was incompatible with the technology that AT&T and T-Mobile used. But those days are pretty much gone. Everybody now is doing LTE. That's the data and voice technology, and it's the same across all the carriers. And this is an LTE-capable phone. So a SIM card from Verizon will make it a Verizon phone. A SIM card from T-Mobile will make it a T-Mobile phone. And you don't have to worry about going across the street. You can take it with you. Generally, I buy phones unlocked because I want to have that flexibility. You know where it might make a difference? When you travel, if you would like to, if you want to go somewhere and get a SIM card in that country, you can.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Unlocked is better. If it's the same price, go for it. It's about, what, $200?
It's, just $249.
$249. That's a good deal.
Yeah.
And it's you're going to like it. It's a very nice phone. It's up-to-date Android, which I like. And Motorola has said that they're going to keep this is the key on an Android phone. You want the monthly security update. It's kind of like with Windows, where there's every month an update. Google puts out an update to Android at the beginning of every month. It usually takes a while to trickle down. But you want a phone that's going to be updated monthly and not be too many months behind. And I think the Moto G6 is one of those. So enjoy.
Well, thank you very much, Leo.
My pleasure. I'm glad you asked. Carrier locking. That's just terrible. But nowadays, I think if you're buying a phone outright, there's no reason. It'd be like, what business says you can't move to another business? Sorry. It's like I go to a dry cleaner and they give me a bag, with their name on it to put my dry cleaning in. Oh, thank you. That's nice. And I bring my dry cleaning to them. It's like if I said, you know what, I don't want to bring my dry cleaner to you anymore. I want to go across the street to the other dry cleaner. Oh, no, you're going to have to pay us $150 if you want to do that. What? I have to pay you to stop going to you? No. Only in this country do cell phone companies get away with that. It's just, fortunately, it's changing. It really is changing. Thank goodness. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. On we go to line three. Marco in Madeira Islands, Portugal. Hello, Marco.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm going to be in Portimao in a couple of weeks.
You won't come to Madeira?
No, I wish. It's a cruise, so I have to go where the boat goes. But but I could tell you I'm a fan of Madeira. Drinking it.
You should find some time in the future.
I will. This is my first time in Portugal, and I know it won't be my last. What can I do for you, Marco?
So this is the following. I have an iPhone 8, which yes. I love very much.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, how should I proceed when a friend sends a photo or a video, or if I should open those funny videos from Facebook?
That's a great question. On a computer, it would be risky to click links unless you really expected it. You knew your friend was sending it. That was a way people would get their computer infected. You get a link on Facebook. You won't believe this video of what you did last night. And you go, I was asleep. What did I do? And it turns out it's malware. Different on the iPhone. You're very safe. So I would not hesitate. As long as it's from a friend and you kind of expect it. If you say to yourself, what video? I wasn't there, then be a little suspicious. But it is completely safe on the iPhone to open those videos or photos. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So tell me, what's the weather like right now in the Madeira Islands, Marco?
Great, very hot.
Very hot. Have you been to Portimão?
No, I haven't. It's in the southern part.
Yes, it's on the Mediterranean, I think, yeah. I can't wait. It's in the Algarve, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have a boat that goes from here straight to Portimão, but I'm not on it.
Hey, you don't need to. You're on the Madeira Islands. You're happy. Go lucky.
Yes.
How nice.
It's good to go for away.
Yeah, that's why I'm going. I can't wait. We're on a boat, so we sail around. We start in Barcelona. We go to Portimao. We go to Seville. We go to Cadiz. We go to Malta, Morocco, Italy, France, all over the place. I love it. I can't wait.
Going to be great.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's so nice to know you listen in Portugal. Thank you.
Yes, I was listening to you for quite some time now.
Well, your English is excellent.
The accent could be a little bit more improved.
I like the accent. No. Don't lose your accent. That's awesome.
So you think that there is no danger of infecting the iPhone, even if it's a video from Facebook or...
Yeah, it's the iPhone is so locked down. This is the beauty of the iPhone. When they designed Windows and Macintosh, they weren't aware of the, you know, how dangerous the internet was going to be. These were both pre-internet, basically. But the iPhone was designed in an era that the internet existed. They knew where the threats were going to be coming from. And for instance, when you open something in an app, it can't affect any other app. You know, it's so locked down. So it's not that there are absolutely no security problems on an iPhone. It's just that they're fixed quite quickly. The worst I've ever seen is, you know, people could send text messages with malformed Unicode characters that would crash your phone. And those are fixed very rapidly. And there was no malware issue. Although whenever you can crash a device, that's the first step towards creating malware. But nobody ever got the chance because it was always fixed so quickly. You're on literally the most secure platform there is. When I talk to security experts and hackers, they all use iPhones. It is the most secure operating system there is. You're fine.
Yeah, one of the reasons I'm asking this, the other day I opened a video someone sent me from Facebook. It was a little kid dancing, one of those videos you find everywhere.
Yeah.
And I went to the car the next day, and the Bluetooth connection disconnected and reconnected again, just by itself.
Not related.
I don't know if it would be related or not.
Not related. Bluetooth's a nightmare. It does that anyway. Bluetooth doesn't need any help. Bluetooth drops all the time. It doesn't need any help. There are Bluetooth attacks. In fact, we covered Bluetooth attacks on Security Now last week. I wasn't here, but Steve talked about them. But not on, not in this, and not related to this, to getting a video. You're very safe.
Okay.
Marco, obrigado. It's so nice to talk to you. Have a great afternoon.
Yes.
Or evening, I guess.
See you. Have a nice day.
All right. So good to talk to you. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye. Have a nice day.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Always good to hear from the Madeira Islands or anywhere anywhere in the world. How about, I don't know, Singapore? Mark is on the line. Hi, Mark.
Hi there, Leo. Good afternoon.
This international hour on the show. I love Singapore, too. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful island.
Yeah, and I think I'm your third Mark for this afternoon.
It's also the Mark Show.
I've been watching it. Yeah. Anyway, I'm second time caller. First time was on the show 1445.
Oh, nice.
3rd December 2017.
Oh, you remember it.
And yeah, I got it on my bookmark.
Oh, nice.
question I asked in that show was regarding mirrorless cameras. And I just noticed in the last couple of weeks that Nikon has come up with a full frame model.
Yes.
Mirrorless camera.
Yes.
I guess you should just wait for the other guy to come up with one.
Canon will probably do it too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was talking to Chris Marquardt about this. You know, I'm a, so just for people who are listening so they understand, the big professional cameras, the DSLRs, digital single lens reflex cameras, have all had mirrors, giant mirrors that you allow you to, when you're looking through the viewfinder, it actually uses the mirror to bend the light and look through the lens. So your single lens reflex means you're looking through the lens. You're seeing exactly what the camera sensor will see when you press the button. And a lot of, you know, serious photographers, that's the way they like to do it. The problem, of course, is the mechanics of lifting this mirror out of the way to take the picture. That's that big chunk you hear on these cameras. Ch-chung, is the mirror moving up out of the way so the lens, you know, the lens can open up, let the light through to the sensor, and then chunk, the mirror moves back down. It adds complexity, it adds noise, it adds bulk, and it adds weight. So a number of manufacturers have started to look at mirrorless cameras. Now, here's the problem with mirrorless. You can no longer look through the viewfinder and see what's coming into the lens. Optically, you have to use a little, they actually have a little video camera. They show you a video of what you're seeing. So the viewfinder is a video screen. And it can, in some ways, it can be better. It can give you more information. Because it's a screen, it's a computer screen, it can have information, a histogram. It can show you levels and all sorts of stuff. It doesn't have to be optically modified. So it's more capable. It also means by eliminating the mirror, not only is it less complex, bulky, and heavy, the sensor is much closer to the lens, and all of these mirrorless cameras are more flexible in terms of lens adapters and lenses you can use because the optics are simpler. So the trade-off is lighter, less bulky, more a simpler operation, but you don't get an optical view of what's going on through the world. And some people like Chris Marquardt say, no, I need an optical viewfinder. I don't want to see a video of what I'm of what the camera's looking at. I, for a long time, for this very reason, have been shooting mirrorless, first with the Olympus OMD series, which I really like. That's a Micro Four Thirds camera. And recently with the Sony A7 series. Sony makes the sensors that a lot of companies, including, by the way, Nikon, use. It's the same sensor, but they make a mirrorless version. And I think both Nikon and Canon, who are the big DSLR companies, are a little worried about mirrorless. A lot of photographers prefer mirrorless. A lot don't, so I don't suspect they'll get rid of the mirrors entirely. Photokina, I don't know if you're familiar with this, Mark, but Photokina is the big photo show. It's coming up September 26th. And Chris says it's likely that that's where you'll see the new mirrorless cameras, certainly from Nikon, and possibly, he says, he believes, Canon will also announce one at Photokina this year.
I can't believe Canon is going to let this go without an answer.
Yeah. So we're pretty sure Nikon's doing it. I think they've even admitted that. But the question is, will Canon do it? And the rumor is strong that Canon will do a full frame. Now, by the way, that's the other thing you want. So when I started shooting with the Olympus OMD, it was Micro Four Thirds. It's a much smaller sensor. The big DSLRs all use sensors that are roughly the size of a 35-millimeter film piece. And that's called full frame. And the lenses are, you know, for full frame are different. Professionals want at least that size sensor, if not bigger. And it is rumored that both Nikon and Canon will do full frame mirrorless. Nikon, according to the rumor, is working on two mirrorless. Now, they call them prosumer, which worries me a little bit. And this is one thing Nikon and Canon are very reluctant to hurt their pro lines, right? That's their bread and butter. The 5D Mark IV, the 1D, the D1 from Nikon. Those are big money cameras, and the pros all use them. And so I wouldn't be surprised. It would be interesting. Nikon maybe is a little bit more willing to eat into that line. Canon's not going to do anything as good as their full-frame DSLRs, I suspect. This is called a prosumer. Does that mean it'll be, you know, what will be the trade-offs? I don't know. But we will probably know in around a month, sometime in late September. What do you shoot right now?
I have a very old Sony, and I'm looking at changing to one of those mirrored or mirrorless, and this is where my...
this is the decision, yeah.
Rubicon is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Rubicon, exactly, yeah. So I have a good friend who is a Nikon shooter. He was about to buy the 850, which is is that a nice Nikon DSLR. It has that nice Sony sensor in it. And he heard about the mirrorless. He said, okay, because he was thinking of switching to Sony. So you've got Sony lenses right now, right?
Yeah, that's right. The Alpha 350.
So that might
really
be
old one.
Yeah, that's a smaller sensor, I think. But that might be an argument to stick with Sony, right? I have to say I couldn't be happier with a Sony. I've had the A7, A7R, A7R2. That's what I shoot with right now.
Yeah.
I've avoided the A7R3.
I get to use the lenses.
That's a good reason.
Lenses,
You know what I'm taking on my vacation in a few weeks is an A7R2. I can't bite the bullet for the $3,000 upgrade to the R3, but the A7R2, which is practically medium format. It's 42 megapixels. And on it, I'm using a very expensive manual focus lens that I spent, I don't even want to say it, a ridiculous amount of money on from Leica. But it'll be a manual focus camera. And yet, because the sensor is so good in this, the images I'm getting, you can see some of them on my camera site, leo.camera. I feel like the crispness, the resolution, the color because of the Leica, the light that Leica brings in, I'm very, very happy with. Chris Markworth's been saying, oh, just take a 50mm. Take the chance. Oh, man. So I could not be happier with the A7s. I really think that's a nice series. But you're right. If you're...
I've heard Chris advocating the taking the prime lens and... walking in or walking out.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm a little nervous.
you're the man. Do I have time for another quick question?
About a minute, Mark. Yeah, go ahead.
Data hack. In Singapore, early last month, there was a public report on a massive data hack in the public healthcare system here in Singapore.
Oh, Lord.
It was going on for 6 days, and it took 2 weeks to go public. And 1.5 million patient records were copied.
Oh, that's horrific.
All personal data, name, national ID number, which is like your SSN.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yeah. Address, email address, cell phone number, next of kin, your health records, all.
Hey, hang on, Mark, because I have to take a break. I'd like to hear the rest of your question, and I'm sure everybody else would, but we do need to break for a word from our sponsor. We'll have more right after this. Oh, still taking calls after the hour, so stay tuned. Wow, so it's interesting because one of the requirements of GDPR, and I know it doesn't affect Singapore, and it certainly doesn't affect the Singapore Health Service, but if a company in Singapore is doing business in Europe, they only have 72 hours to reveal a breach. A week is a long time. Yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah.
Can you easily change the ID, your personal ID number, or is that something you're...
No, that question was asked, and somebody said that, you know, a whole life history, everything that we do is linked to that number.
Right.
So it's like a... And it, maybe you can change it for one person with a lot of work, but for 1.5 million persons,
wow,
that's going to be... monumental.
Singapore, I didn't know this, has a data protection act. I did not know this, but it doesn't cover the public sector.
there is a PDPA, Personal Data Protection Act, and right. You're right, you know, there's a lot of controversy on the jurisdiction of this act because there is a project that's ongoing where you have your national electronic health records all in a central system, and the government has full access to it without any restrictions, whereas it's the doctors who have the restrictions put on them.
Of course.
So yeah. Question is, yeah, you know, the differentiation between the users and how do you control that and so on and so forth. So here the concern on this data hack is ID thefts, blackmail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's the liability?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, all kinds of things come up to the surface, and I guess there's no way anyone can say to what extent is this thing going to end.
It's as bad as it can get, to be honest. You know, it's one thing for your financial records to leak out, as with Equifax. It's another thing entirely for your health records to leak out. But
for 1.5 million in a city where
that's pretty much everybody, right?
Yeah. 3.5 million, 4 million citizens and permanent residents, you know. So this is quite a nightmare.
Although I noticed that the Prime Minister's records were also in the leak. So yeah. Maybe the government will do something about it. That's
He just flicked it off his shoulder to say, I've got nothing to hide, so yeah. They took my records, so be it. You all know what I'm receiving treatment for and so on. So he says, no sweat for me.
Yeah, that's not much reassurance. Anyway. Mark, it's great to talk to you. I'm so glad you listen in Singapore. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Let me know what camera you get. Do you think you're going to get the Nikon?
I think I'm going to get a Sony, but we'll see what the other two
I would wait.
Come up with.
Yeah, wait till after Photokina. And the other thing, of course, they'll announce them. It'll be months before they're available. And what you're really curious about, and I hope they announce it, is the price. Because Nikon can be, you could spend a lot of money. You know, the R3, A7 R3 body's $3,000, $3,000. So these are not cheaper cameras by any means.
No, not at all. And all of them are expensive.
Yeah. There's no inexpensive. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Mark.
Thank you.
See ya.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have a good morning.
You too. That's right. It's morning in Singapore. Holy cow. I am really happy about the images. I know, Anthony, but I'm very happy with the images I got. You look at Leo.camera. It was kind of a test where I just took the 50 with me to Mendocino, and gosh, I'm happy. Leo Laporte, the crazy little thing called the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo the number. And as I started to say before the break, I'm recording ahead. Vacation's coming, and we like to give you brand new shows. So what we do is the show will end in a few minutes. After a few more calls, but if you're on the line, hang on the line. And if you haven't gotten in yet, this is a good time to call 8888 Ask Leo. I'll keep answering calls for another 45 minutes. We'll record those and it'll be a brand new show. No one's heard except you when I'm on vacation next month. 888-827-5536. Barbara on the line from Red Bluff. Hey, Barbara.
Hi. Hi, how are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm great. It's pretty smoky up here with all the forest fires.
I know. I hope you're safe.
Well, we're trying to stay that way. We're about 40 miles from where the fire is, but we're getting all the smoke, so it's not been a pleasant week for any of us in this area.
We were up your way last Wednesday through Friday. I went up to Lake Tahoe, and we went up, and I was, so much smoke, so much smoke.
Oh, goodness, yes.
And it affects your breathing and everything, so stay safe, stay inside if you can.
That's what we've been doing.
Get a molecule.
Yeah. I have two Mac computers. One's an iMac, one's a MacBook Pro. And unfortunately, quite a while back, I stopped doing the updates on them because I thought one of the new operating systems, it had a lot of bugs to it. So right. I just stopped at that point. And now I'm on the 10.8.5 Mountain Lion, and I would like to update to the High Sierra 10.13.6, which is the current one they keep sending me updates on.
Right.
And I called the Mac support, and they, I thought maybe I had to update all of those operating systems in between, but he said, the tech guy said, no, you just go straight to the App Store.
That's right.
And you go to the High Sierra, and you can download it. And I just wanted to reconfirm that with you, if you think that.
Yes.
Yes.
That's one of the beauty parts of the way Apple does its Mac OS is you don't have to install the intervening versions. You can just jump to the last version that your computer can handle. Now, if it's a really older Mac, it may not be able to go all the way to High Sierra.
What he told me, he says, if you're still receiving
updates, right,
then you're okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's exactly what you do. You've got the App Store on there. That's the big hurdle is that even earlier versions of Mac OS don't have the App Store. So they have to go to at least the first version with the App Store, and then they can update from there. But if you've got the App Store, hey, you're golden.
Wonderful.
Yeah, just search for High Sierra. It's a free upgrade. Anticipate a couple of hours. Yeah. And I've mentioned this earlier. There's a site called everymac.com, where you can look up your model. And they tell you there the specs, but they also tell you what the most recent version of the operating system is. And it's always the case that you can go jump, as long as you got the Apple Store, you can jump right to the version, most recent version.
Oh, boy, that is great news.
Yay.
The second part of this question is about the backup. Now, I have my iMac hooked to the Time Machine, and so is that enough of a backup, having that?
Well, so one of the things we talk about with backup is imagining disasters, which nobody wants to do, but it's a useful exercise. And so you think about, okay, what's my data? What would I be willing to lose? What would I be unwilling to lose? And then what could happen? And disasters range from everything. The most common is human error. I accidentally erased the file or the drive or the folder. And the worst thing that can happen, and is the least likely, is something like a house fire where everything burns down. Now, the Time Machine will protect you against the former, but it's not going to protect you against the latter. So generally, if you really care, I mean, this is the first thing you have to think about. How much trouble am I willing to go to protect this data? How important is this data to me? And if it's important, it's baby pictures you don't want to lose. You have no other source of, or financial records.
Pictures on there.
Yeah. Then those are things that, how much would I cry if I lost those? And then how much trouble am I willing to go to make sure I don't? If you really care, then you really should have both a local backup, like you have, Time Machine, and what we call offsite, where if there is a house fire, you're still protected because you made a copy. And the easiest way to do this is get a second external hard drive, make a backup, and bring it to work. And then periodically, the other thing you have to consider is, well, how much time am I willing to lose? Am I willing to lose everything I did in the last week, month, year?
Right.
That minimum time frame, whatever the most you're willing to lose, if it's just a day, means that you have to do that every day. That's why we talk about Carbonite, because that's an ongoing off-site backup. You'll never be more than a few minutes out of date. If you have to copy it to a hard drive and schlep it to work, you might not do that more than weekly or monthly. You might even forget and not do it at all.
Uh-huh.
So that's, you got to think about these scenarios, and nobody wants to. It's a lot of work. I think a very easy, simple solution is to get either a USB drive, or in many cases, is enough just to get one of those little thumb drives, plug it in, copy that stuff that's just the stuff you don't want to lose. That's the most important stuff. Photos is always a good start. Copy it over to that and just bring it to work. And once in a while, get another one, copy it over, bring it to work, bring the old one back, copy it over. You know, just kind of like shuttle it back and forth.
And I was concerned also about downloading this newer version, the High Sierra. Is there any? They say be sure everything's backed up before you do these things.
There's usually no problem. Almost never is there a problem. But no one wants to be the person, and I don't either, who says, oh, just go ahead. It's always prudent to back up, and you should be backing up all the time anyway. But all you need to back up is your data. You don't have to back up anything else. You don't have to back up applications or anything else. Just back up your, you know, those pictures. Now, I should point out there are lots of ways to get free picture backup. Google has Google Photos, and they even have a Macintosh little program called Backup and Sync that will automatically, over time, it's not instant, but over time, back up your photos to Google Photos, where they're even safer. Apple has its own iCloud. They charge for that, but they don't charge an awful lot. That might be another solution. Google Photos will automatically back up everything in Apple's Photos app, so you could do that. And that's a free way to do it. If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, they do it. Flickr allows a terabyte of photo backup. So lots of people who back up your photos.
They'll do that kind of thing.
Yeah. So if it's almost all photos, but remember, there's other things you got to keep in mind, financial records, maybe even email, that kind of stuff.
Well, I guess I've been thinking that my time machine is taking care of all that.
It is, but one copy of something is not enough.
So I should just... hook another new 1 or 2 terabyte.
Copy it over.
Hard drive on there and copy it all over.
Yeah, now you have two. Now you have two copies and the original. That's three, and that's really what we look for. The mantra I use is 3-2-1 backup. Three copies. That might include the original and two backups, but three copies. Two different kinds of media, and that's just so that if you copied it all to DVDs. You know, and that stopped working or you didn't have a DVD drive. You know, two different kinds. And then one of them, if possible, should be off-site.
Yeah.
3-2-1. Three copies, two forms of media, one off-site.
Sounds good to me.
Hey, good luck.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
Enjoy your show very
much. You for listening. I'm out of time. I can't believe it. Thanks for joining me. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.